Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Matthew Charest. He's the Director of Financial Markets and Community Investment for the U.S. Government Accountability Office, GAO. And today we'll be talking about a report, Real Estate Investors, the Leverage Cycle, and the Housing Market Crisis. Matt, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
I guess, first of all, maybe we should figure out what does the GAO office do?
Okay, well, the GAO is an agency of the Congress, and we do studies mostly at the request of chairman and ranking members. And we're about 3,000 folks, and we have offices across the country, and we look wherever there's federal dollars.
Okay. And the goal is to save?
The goal is to improve how government works.
Okay. Well, you have your work cut out for you, I'd say.
Yes, indeed.
And you're independent of?
Yeah, the Comptroller General is appointed for a 15-year term, and so that gives us a great deal of independence from the parties and from the different parts of the government.
Okay. What prompted this particular study about real estate investors?
Well, I think that the real interest here was trying to understand better the extent to which vacant properties was a problem across the country. And there was also some great interest in trying to figure out whether or not changing some of the decision rules when looking at potential modifications could somehow reduce the incidence of vacancies. I think that was what really got us first into to take a look at this. And as you know, the report focuses principally on answering the question of what's going on in the area of vacant properties.
How did you define what an investor was in the report?
Well, I don't know that we really do. What we're looking at here is the extent to which there are these vacant properties. We do some assessment looking at the strategies that localities are using to identify the extent to which they have vacant properties and what they're doing to manage them. So we do get from them a little bit of about what they're doing to try to make sure that the properties are maintained. And so part of that is what role the servicers play and then what role investors play in making sure the properties are maintained.
Now, are you talking about being maintained in a 2012 context or during the cycle of, let's say, 2006 or 7 when everybody was still current and hopeful?
No, it's more in today's context.
Okay. The report, because it does come out talking about some negative conclusions about investors. I think it was defining an investor that owned more than one home, and so just a multiple property owner. And one thing it I don't know that it defined to my satisfaction was what the difference might be between an investor and a speculator. And in the report, it did talk about there were different stratas of investors. So let's touch on that. There was an intent to maybe buy and hold or buy and flip, and there was some differentiation in how the results panned out for those different types of investors.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is the, sort of the definition of something that is owned as principal residence versus something that is not. And so you might be looking at investor there in terms of the property as opposed to we tend to use investors in the report more in terms of who holds the note. And so there what we were looking at is what sort of requirements they may place upon servicers to maintain the underlying property.
Okay. In the report, it talked about the buy and flip person, and the different investor would be a buy and buy and hold.
Okay, so in that part of the report, we're talking about different strategies that localities are using for you know, disposing of properties ultimately. And there were some of the communities talked to us about concern about getting access to properties that are that have completed the foreclosure process, and that they were having difficulties competing with investors. And in this sense, we're using the term investors to mean those that are buying properties without the intent of living in them.
Correct. I kind of got the gist that the report was dealing with the people that were buying properties, not occupying it, and that was a concern that they had certainly done more of it than was first thought. So that's one of the things this report brings out, is that the investor participation level during the boom years was different than what was once thought. Is that correct?
I don't know that we address that at all, frankly. What we do talk about are some concerns that localities had expressed in trying to get properties to homeowners, and that they thought they might be more likely to maintain the property. So that's more once the property has gone through the foreclosure process. So not so much, I don't think we really address the level of investment appetite for REO.
Okay, you're talking about properties that have already been taken back and are problems for cities.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would imagine some of the programs that you're trying to deal with loan modifications and so forth, are trying to prevent the vacancy from happening in the first place.
Of course, yeah. That's what their goal is, to keep loans at affordable levels so people can stay in their homes.
Okay.
What this report really does is it's first trying to draw dimensions around the problem.
Okay, and
so, for example, our big headline on this is that the number of vacant properties has increased between 2000 and 2010 by 51%.
And that's nationally?
Nationally.
And we've got something like 18 million of them now?
Right now, not including seasonal and migrant properties,
okay,
it's 10 million.
Okay. So we normally have quite a few. It actually surprised me when I looked into it. It's normal to have millions and millions of vacant homes, but it's not normal to have 18 or 10 million that are not seasonal and that type of thing.
Yeah, if you just want to look at sort of the rate, the rate had gone up. Vacant properties as a percent of all housing units,
yes,
went from 6% to 8% between 2000 and 2010. It's a big increase. It's, you know, one-third growth in the vacancy rate.
Is there a normal level where you could say if we could only get back to this number, then we would probably be okay?
Yeah, I don't know what the norm would be. That's just what we're looking at, 2 points in time.
Okay. 2000, the vacancy rate wasn't causing a big problem.
We weren't concerned about vacancies in 2000.
Okay, so maybe that
is a normal time, but I don't know what normal means.
Okay. Well, one that's not affecting the market negatively or a city negatively, that type of thing, and, you know, causing crime and that type of thing. It seems that during this downturn that the lenders have been more accommodative than ever as far as being offering program after program. And what is your feeling about the success that those programs have had in attempting to keep the owner in the property?
Well, it's been mixed. So there's certainly more loan modification than has been the case in the past. And that's both through HAMP and through proprietary modifications. But it could be that also the demand for it is greater than it's ever been. So there's still quite a few homeowners who are at risk of foreclosure today, even with all of the different activities that servicers have engaged in, investors have paid into in terms of a modification of loans.
I would imagine one of the factors is this is probably the first time where you have some states where a negative equity is the prominent problem.
That's a huge, huge factor. This is what marks this as a unique period. You've never had the same, proportion of homeowners or mortgagors who are underwater, and the depth to which they're underwater is pretty steep. What makes this unique is that it's national. I mean, you have had this in local markets and maybe even regionally with certain regional economic downturns, but you've not seen this on a national scale.
No, this is the all-time the all-time problem for real estate. One of the things the loan modification programs hasn't done is hasn't reduced principal. So is that something that probably won't occur, or is it being considered?
No, they're beginning to do it under the HAMP program, and there's a small amount of principal forgiveness that had been done, not a lot, I would grant you that. And then the settlement today anticipates, that these particular servicers and investors would be doing more principal forgiveness going forward.
Are any of these programs designed to be for the non-owner occupant borrower that has one of the problems of being upside down?
That's in fact one of the recent announcements under HAMP was that it was going to open it up to non-owner occupants. So the various HAMP loan modification programs would now be open for investors.
And that would be that could be for multiple loans simultaneously then?
That I don't know.
Okay.
And part of this is coming out of the recent announcement, so I don't know that all the details have been made public.
Right. They just sort of pointed to the direction, and the specifics will be coming out later. That's right.
There'll be some sort of details and specific guidance coming out. If not already, I may have missed that.
I did notice one major change that I thought would be very helpful would be having no appraisal necessary to accomplish the refi if somebody's current. And I think that's probably a wise decision.
Well, I think it would certainly help a lot more homeowners be able to refinance their mortgages.
Yeah, I mean, it's the lender's already in the position of whatever negative equity position there is. I guess they might as well be there at 4% instead of 6.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall you might be talking about HARP here.
Yes, probably.
And, that there were some changes made to that. I wasn't sure that it did away with the appraiser or that it moved to an AVM as opposed to an appraisal. So there is some attempt to try to get at what the value of the property is. It's just not through appraisal.
And I think that it's probably not the determining factor, at least for the refi. I didn't, because we did have the program, I think it was, went to 125% loan to value. And I think the latest one that I saw was just not going to be.
There's no maximum LTV with the revision.
Right. So that doesn't, I guess the only reason you'd have an appraisal would be just to find out where your starting point was.
That's a good point.
Don't need to spend too much money if it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but they are looking at valuations, it's just in a different way.
What's interesting about the problem is that when you're talking about vacancy, you're talking about foreclosures, which is probably one and the same, is it's really skewed toward a half a dozen states. And we have a national problem in that the size of it is definitely on national scale, but you have a lot of states that are probably looking around going, well, that didn't happen here.
I don't know that there's states where they could say it didn't happen, but there's certainly some states where it's much worse.
Yeah.
And that's what this report does. That it points to the ones that you might expect, like California, Nevada, and Florida, which have horrible vacancy rates, and it's increased dramatically over the 10-year period that we looked at. But there are a few places, the exceptions might be North Dakota.
Yeah, because they have oil.
That economy is a little bit different. So they don't have near the same vacancy rates. In fact, I'm just looking at a map in our report. And so the vacancy rate, there was an increase in the number of vacancies in every state, but it was the least in North Dakota and New Mexico and West Virginia, interestingly enough.
Well, California has its share, and one of the things that the legislature of the state did is it had created a fine system for once the property was foreclosed on, that the lenders had to maintain it in a certain fashion, or they would be subject to fines, and that has definitely caused some issues. Especially when, like you were saying, the servicers were busy. So were the lenders in 2008 and 2009 when they were foreclosing pretty briskly.
Yeah.
They couldn't get to all the inventory. And, the cities were finding them, and I'm not sure everybody had enough staff to do whatever was necessary.
Yeah. Well, you can go too far, right, at some point.
Yeah, I think.
It makes the, and I think that there's some examples where localities have decided not to go the sort of the penalty route for fear that it made then marketing the property later that much more difficult to do.
Well, I do know of an incident where this is the ratio of the loan to value at this point. There was probably a $300,000 loan on a property in an area of San Bernardino that was up worth about $80,000 now. And the fines on the property were $100,000. So if you were the lender attempting to sell that, you would have closing costs and have to write another check on top of that to clear off the fine. And they finally just said to the city, you know what? It's all yours.
Right, exactly.
You know, and so, but they also said, now you're not going to get it by deed. You're going to have to get it by tax default. So for 5 years, it was their plan to let the grass be 6 feet high. And that's the kind of thing you're talking about. It really is a better situation if everybody kind of cooperates and realizes we're dealing with a very unusually large situation, and maybe by cooperating we can get to where we both want to go.
Yeah, it's a challenge, no doubt.
Yes. I think one of the things that's had to surprise the lenders is the size of the losses that they're taking. And perhaps you can help with this, is part of the strategy that I see, I'm seeing start to emerge is when we're talking about keeping people in their homes and getting even deed in lieu of foreclosure, is that it's at some point will there be an offer back to that owner for to be able to buy the property that they in fact lost years before?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, outside the settlement, there are. For those who may have lost the property through a flawed foreclosure process, the settlement does provide for some compensation there.
Yeah.
But
outside of that,
I'm not aware of anything along the lines of what you're describing.
Okay. No, I don't think it was planned yet. I just think I'm trying to think it in advance. I know they're doing a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and What are the biggest concerns when an area has a large amount of vacancies? What's the negative side to that for them?
Well, there's a lot of negatives to it. It does reduce properties in the area generally, which can have an effect on your taxable base, right?
Right.
Tax assessments go down. At the same time, you might have an increase in demand for fire and police and so forth. So those are the sort of the negative consequences of abandoned properties.
Exactly at a time when a city doesn't need any of those things.
No, these cities are spending tremendous sums of money to, a great example is for the city of Detroit, it has 40,000 properties that it owns and is maintaining, and it pays $25 each time to cut the lawn. Well, so, every couple of weeks when the grass is growing, the city's paying $1 million to cut lawns. That's an incredible drain. And then on top of that, over a two-year period, the city of Detroit spent $20 million for demolishing properties, all while your tax base is declining. It's an incredible demands on the city.
In a scale that we really haven't seen, I'm sure, since the Great Depression. Well, I think one of the things that'll come out of this is probably some change in policies to where we won't get here again. Is that something that and I know that this particular study probably didn't cover, but is that, for instance, the discussion of qualified residential mortgage and that type of thing, does the GAO have an opinion of that type of legislation?
Yeah, GAO has done some work on QRM, and I am not the right person to talk about that. I can put you in contact with the right person for that. But obviously there's still quite a bit that's up in the air in terms of QRM and QM.
All right. Anything else that we should know about the vacant property problem then?
No, just the dimensions are incredible, and it's a 51% increase in vacancies over a 10-year period. It puts a lot of demands on the cities. It puts lots of demands on servicers and households. That's it.
And what percentage of those do you think are they actually, have you done any studies about what percentage of those are in foreclosure?
You know, that's something we could not do, is to say how many of those were. We did get some information, for example, out of the city of Chicago, which did some field work to see of the 18,000 properties they identified as being vacant, how many were in the foreclosure process. And I think it was around 13,000. So it's a very big percentage.
Right.
But there will always be some level of vacancies. These come from census data, and they've been collecting this, in the same way for a very long time. So you can compare over time what the change in the vacancy rate is, and that's more of the concern as opposed to the absolute number. Because, there'll always be properties, taking away the seasonal, taking away the migrant workers, that there's always some properties that individuals may own and are simply not using, or that they are between transactions, whether it's leasing or buying. So there's always some level of vacancy, but what we're seeing here is just a tremendous increase over this 10-year period.
And I think you did have a fair amount of investor participation in markets, and I think at the time there was certainly some thought that the prices were escalating so fast that I just assumed it not be occupied, and then perhaps when the price changed, it never got occupied,
Sure. I mean, when in the bubble years. I'm sure there's quite a few vacancies that were there where it's just simply, investors buying a property with the idea of selling it later.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Well, at the time, if you got out before the bubble burst, it was a great idea.
Yeah, that's the problem. It did have its moment to where it made all the sense in the world, and then it took it back. So
in a market like in Nevada, you might have you have overbuilding, and you have vacancies as a consequence of that. In places, like Cleveland, you have, loss of population. So it might be that that's driving more of the vacancies. So certainly foreclosures is part of both.
That's right. You have complete industry changes in those areas that you just mentioned, and you have complete overbuilding in some of the areas that were booming.
Right.
Some combination to that. Some of it's more solvable than others. I mean, unfortunately, bulldozing very old houses that no longer make economic sense to fix is not a bad idea. You get
some
to quit.
Cities are doing that, and I think that there'll be some of the states that are getting money through the settlement might just be using some of the money for that purpose. And there was neighborhood stabilization program funds that also, certain percent of those could be used for demolition. And in certain markets, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time. We've been talking with Matt Charest. He's the Director of Financial Markets and Community Investment with the GAO. Matt, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
All righty. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.